table, then the finish of it was, and Velma made pies. So now, if your pockets were here, it went down to there.
Right.
Now you might be down to there, you see, because, I mean, those pies are so good, and, you know, and Daddy had probably got about, you know, probably got some lemon and some apple and some pumpkin, you know, and I mean, just all kind of, he probably had about five or different, half a dozen pies. So the moral of that story was, don't call Dad, you know, to ask him what we have for dinner, because you're going to get the whole story of it, you know. When they mention water and butter and salt and pepper, you're in trouble. You know, that means when you come home at night, because, you know, when you come home, you know, you're going to run, go down to the bunny hop. That's when where we all went down and partied after we get come home and change clothes and get ready to go to the bunny hop. So, but they want you to let you know. Before you go to the bunny hop, you know, you drop, see, and we would cash that money in at the Warner Theater, you know, and they'd, you know, we'd have all that money, you know, so they would cash it in and whatever, how many dollars we would have. So before you went to the bunny hop, you know, you had to give up some of those nickels, not no, well, you had bills then, you know, but see, if you had $30, $40, you know, and no, you're going to leave about $15, $20 there, you know.
So you had to pay off the credit.
Yeah, you know. I mean, you know, my dad worked in a mine, too. He was like 72 when he retired from the mine here in the 1950s. So my dad would be about 136 years old if he was still living today. But he worked in a hard time of the mine. See, a lot of, you know, later on, mines got safer and things. But, no, he worked probably in the 20s and 30s and, you know, on up to the 50s. I was in junior high school when he retired from the mine. And at 72, I thought he was about the same age as the guys that he worked with. He like 30 years older than those guys, you know,
right.
And looked in better shape than most of them. Because he wasn't a drinker, and he wasn't, you know, like a lot of the guys, you know. And I was telling you, like, the guys be down here and on Saturday, and everybody dressed. I mean, they had nice suits, and but nobody. Nobody would not have a shine on their shoes. Nobody. Because, say, if you wanted to take a girl out for, you know, you know what that dad looked at? Was your shoes. You see?
Right.
If your shoes were ugly, mm-hmm. There's a good chance you might be ugly, too. So you were not going to take that girl out. See? See,
right.
Dad didn't look at, oh, you know, how your hair was done, nothing like that. But see, today, people don't even worry about shoes. You know, they were, you know, you go there, you know, you got, you don't even have shoes on, you know. You got those, you know, little things just wrapped, you know, right. And so it's a whole different ball game. But no, your shoes was it, you know.
Nice shoes.
Yeah. Well, you see, I usually wear my boots, you know, but I put these shoes on because, you know, actually you were coming today, you know, and I didn't, but then I was going to wear another pair. Tomorrow I have some other, you know, but I got my work stuff on,
yeah.
You know, but see, that was another thing. See, like leather shoes. See, everybody wore leather shoes. See, today they sell this crap, and I get so much of it, you know, that, you know, like right now, see, I don't have, business haven't started big yet, getting soles and heels and things like that on shoes, because, see, they went out and spent that money at Christmas time to buy this junk.
Uh-huh.
Now, starting here, probably close around now, I'll start getting all the shoes in there that have already fell apart. Al, these just kind of pulled apart. You ain't telling Al nothing, you know, because they're not making them worth a nickel, because they know we don't get them fixed at, you know. So you know, it's your repair shops, you know. If from me, the next shop here would be out of Pittsburgh.
Wow.
You know, there's not used to be a shop.
There's one in Morgantown.
There's one in Morgantown, Charlie. Who's a friend? We both have been in business about the same time,
mm-hmm.
But Charlie sells clothes, and you know, I mean, he had a whole all dresses and all he sells, and he makes their own handbags and sell them everywhere. So shoe repair to them is just kind of a sideline.
Mm-hmm.
Now they'll work on some nice, you know, clean, you know, doctor, Lord, law shoes at people, but they ain't working on nothing like that.
Yeah.
They ain't working on nothing like that. So about 80% of my business, Charlie don't want even, I got an Al's book over there, Al's book. Anything Al wants, you know, I mean, I pay, like the, you know, whatever the wholesale price is, you know, but he makes sure that don't, because they don't want, and I mentioned to it one time, I said, Charlie, you got to want to make sure I stay in business, don't you? Because you don't want none of my customers. And they had to smile about it, you know, because it was the truth, you know.
Right.
No, we don't want none of your customers, man. And anything you want from over here, you can get. If you need soles, you need some, you know, glue, whatever you need, you know, you can get it. And but see, he's in that kind of thing where he'll take in, you know, nice shoes. He'll put some soles. When I go in that back room, you know, I'll just go in the back. Whatever I need, you know. I don't have to, you know, stop at the counter or anything. Everybody knows me, and I just, you know, just go back and if he's busy, I'll just get whatever I need. If I need a pair of soles, whatever, you know, I get, and he just marks it down. Or if he's not there, one of the young ladies will mark it down.
Mm-hmm.
but we have that good, you know, kind of relationship, because a lot of times, you know, I'll order not much more than I need when I go to the supply place. So I don't have no big stock of anything.
Yeah.
And Charlie has, he has, you know, big, you know, stock of stuff. And sometimes, like that purse right there, I needed a piece of leather, you know, to, and I see it's matched up there, see, because it was tearing at the top.
Okay.
So I wrapped it with leather, and I sewed the two pieces down on the bottom, and made her, now she's got a nice handle, mm-hmm. you see. But see, he's got a big box over there from all those handbags he makes. And I got another piece before, but it didn't match as well. So when I was on Wednesday, I went in that box and got me a nice piece of leather. And see, I wrapped that. So
is that bag, the rest of it leather?
Looks like it might not.
Probably
be.
Not.
Yeah.
Probably not. But see, it's a good looking bag.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See? But now those straps are leather.
Yeah, that'll last.
But this here, not necessarily, you know, but that front of it, no, see, that's what is their selling point with that,
yeah,
you know,
right.
You got that. But but yeah, you know, everything, you know, that I kind of, and I, like I say, I started in, you know, up in 1948. I got a chance to do, to come down and shine shoes. But I didn't, and then people asked me, said, well, did the man kind of teach you? See, you know, you see all the nationalities down there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See, Willie was like a Hungarian man. Was nobody teaching nobody their trade, not in those days, you see, because, you know, they don't want, you know, nobody, you know, to do what they do.
Right.
You know, you bought that trade from the old country, you know, and so you don't have no thought of teaching somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to D.C. in California, I went to California first. That's when I did, you know, what are you doing New Year's Eve, Billy won the dominoes. I was gone for 20 years, and
uh-huh.
I did all kinds of music, you know, I mean,
uh-huh.
you know, everywhere. and wherever Al went, nobody could outdo Al on that microphone either. You know,
oh, no.
Yeah, I would always have different challenges where when I was, now here I am, I'm with Billy when the Dominoes. Now I'm one of the two people selected out of all the black newspapers in the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now I'm one of the two selected to come to Hollywood, California.
Wow.
And so out there for, I didn't go to clubs too much anyway, you know, a guy was in school with me, and he had a little band here also, but then he went to California, and then he became a preacher. So he'd go down to a club, you know, like, or he would go down, I would go to the club or something, and he'd go, but he wouldn't stay hardly no time. He would go and he would tell somebody there that there's a guy here from West Virginia wants to sing. And see, anytime you mention West Virginia, you know, oh, that's the joke of the night, you know. Hey, we got somebody from West Virginia who wants to sing. Only took about 10 seconds for them fools to know, they, hey, ain't nobody in this place can sing like that guy,
right.
You know. So, and then when I was doing, I did bar mitzvahs and weddings for 13 years.
Uh-huh.
And there was some of the pictures, well, you didn't see a lot. We were not at the Met Theater, were you? So.
Mm-hmm.
They played some of the things of the pictures that, you know, the bat mitzvah girl, you know, little girl. See, everybody, the photographer would take all these pictures,
mm-hmm.
he would send me copies of the ones that the family took. So I would have these pictures of these little kids, you know, like the little two little girls, you know, they want to dance with Al, you know, because, see, their friends, they, oh, what you got? Oh, we got Al Landers going to be at our, I mean, we did like 100 jobs a year. We did every weekend. That's why I have like a strong voice, you know, because like during the summertime, we would do like all 4-hour gigs. We would do a 4-hour gig Saturday afternoon, a 4-hour gig Saturday evening. Sunday, 4-hour gig Sunday afternoon, 4-hour gig Sunday evening. And that's 16 hours, you know, and I'm the only singer. There's no other. That's why, you know, the microphone, I make, you know, I'm really hard on people when that microphone's not right, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm going to dress you up really good if you mess with that.
What was the band?
This band was called the Collegians. And they had been playing for 10, 12, they had been playing for a long time before. But I came back from California because I didn't get on that first trip because I had a little contract in Pittsburgh. It's a whole long story on that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get to make the first trip with Billy Ward. Billy Ward was in the Far East when I first went there. Before I even got there, I was they sent me like a card from Japan, Okinawa, the Philippines, Hawaii, and Canada. And when they got to Bakersfield, they sent me a telegram. I was shining shoes over at Perry Brothers and got a telegram that meet me at the train station on whatever day it was. Yeah. But in the meantime, I read on one of his jackets, somebody came from a little, all these guys came from a little town like this. You know, they wasn't all the big heavyweights that sang in those groups, most of them started with Billy Ward. Mm-hmm. So I had to go to Pittsburgh and break that contract. I rode that bus 7 days.
To Bakersfield?
I rode from Hollywood, California to Pittsburgh to break that contract. Got back on that bus 2 hours later, back to California, but it was too late. I had that little contract in Pittsburgh. I shouldn't have said anything, but I read that jacket. They held up his money for some time because someone had a contract. And they saw a picture, you see, of this guy. So I didn't want to take that chance. So I rode up for 7 days. But then I went back, but it was too late to go on that trip. So I went to D.C.
I'm confused. So this was to play with, this was, sing with the Collegians?
No. I hadn't got the Collegians yet. Okay. Billy Ward and the Dominoes. That's why
Billy
I went out
Ward
there to be with them.
Okay.
So I didn't make that trip. So I went to D.C. for about a year and a half, and I was working in a shoe store. I worked at the hotel, you know, as like one of the housemen, you know, worked there about, you know, every floor had a house. And then I got a job across the street at a shoe store. I worked there for about a year and a half. Now Billy Ward's back in touch with me to come back to California. Mm-hmm. So I go back to California, and then pretty soon we were in a studio doing that song, What Are You Doing New Year's Eve? And that song still sells, you know, after I sold millions and millions of copies.
Yeah.
So after we did that song, and actually I wasn't supposed to be the lead singer of that song. We did, the band played, it was two songs I think we did. The band was played in for, you know, a number of hours in the studio. And then the background singers, which I was one of them. Backgrounds, we sang our part. And then the lead singer, who was over there waiting to do the lead on there, mm-hmm. he couldn't get the song. And Billy Ward looked at me and said, man, can you do that song? And that's how I sang lead on that song.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's how I was, yeah. So I'm singing background and I'm singing lead.
On Billy Ward and the Dominoes.
What are you doing New Year's Eve? And so after we did that, my brother called and found out my dad was in a hospital. And, you know, all those men died from black lung in that time. And he never did come out of that hospital. So here, I just left and went to D.C. where my brother was. And we was coming backwards and forth to go to the hospital. We go to the hospital on, like, Friday, and we leave back on Sunday. And he died the third week. So I know Billy Ward and him said, well, where's that guy? You know, the song? And I never heard from him again. I just never heard from him again. And I came like we came back here, and after my dad died, I just stayed in D.C. at that time. And then people knew they were the owner of the shoe store. Son was being bar mitzvahed. So then, you know, all the guys that work at the stores, you know, we had like 7 stores. Everybody, you know, they have all the. So we was all there at the bar mitzvah, and someone knew I sang, so they wanted me to be up and sing a couple of songs. Well, I got up and sang a couple of songs, and then about a half hour from that, someone came and said, "Ah, the band's looking for you," you know. So those guys came and talked with me, and this guy named Jerome. Now, Jerome was like, oh, I mean, he was it. You know, in the contracts, must include Jerome, you know. But Jerome did not want to do bar mitzvahs and weddings. See, they did a lot of sweet. They had just started into bar mitzvahs and weddings.
This was in D.C.
This in D.C., yeah. And so I practiced with them, you know. And the first gig that I did, they didn't know Jerome wasn't going to be there. So, and there's like about 500 people, all those bar, they're big, you know, and so we was all sitting up out in the big hall, and the lady who was the bar mitzvah lady, she was checking all the tables and all the other folks were on the other side doing hors d'oeuvres and stuff like that, and Mike Pollock, he was the guy that did all the bookings and all. And he went over to the lady, she's, you know, all the way at the end over there, and he was telling her that, you know, the Jerome wasn't going to be with the band, and we got this guy, Al Anderson. From the top of her lungs, "We don't want no Al Anderson," you know. So you see, you know, but you have to go through those challenges as well, you know. Uh-huh. But one thing you always have to know is who you are. You know, see, a lot of folks have been so disruptive, you know, they probably couldn't even sing that night, you know.
Right.
But after that night, I never heard Jerome's name again, you see. Mm-hmm. And then the contracts would be, must include Al Anderson, must include Al Anderson. And I would see that lady, you know, if you do a bar mitzvah for this family, you'll see that same family 2 or 3 bar mitzvahs later, you know, mm-hmm. because that's how that, you know, it all worked around there,
right.
You know. So I would see that lady for different ones, and every time I'd see her, she'd say, "Well, would you ever forgive me?" I said, we'd see each other, you know, a lot. But the bottom line was here I am out there in Hollywood, California with Billy Warner Dominoes. But not only that, I was with a band here called the Fabians. These guys are all Morgantown High guys, and how I start singing with them. Sheriff Whiston, and when I do my, this is my 60th year. I'm going to do my 60-year show here, probably sometime, maybe June, July, or whatever, you know, time. I haven't, just because I want it to be big.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, a lot of folks know me around here. A lot of folks know me almost everywhere.
Yeah.
And, we did the other one at the Met Theater, but I don't think that's big enough to do what I want to do. I want a place where it's going to be, you know, 1,500 people, you know, that would be there or whatever. But this band, the Fabians, I got Sames on a Friday, you know. I'm getting home, getting ready to go down to the bunny hop, you know, and my dad said, "The sheriff called." Oh, man, you know. I ain't going to have as much fun knowing that sheriff called, and I don't know where they called me. My dad didn't say I did anything bad, but he said the sheriff called. And that's all your dad has to say. And so I called him on Monday, and he said his son Dave, Ed and Keith Collins' cousins, had a band, heard I was a singer. Don't know how they ever, I did, later on I found out in a service, this guy that was in a service with me, you know, you do a little singing, you know, on just to keep from work, you know, on the boat coming back from Germany. And Lawrence, later on, it was like, 30 years later, Lawrence was across the street over there. I said, "Lawrence, did you ever tell?" He said, "Yeah, they was asking me, because one of the band guys, his dad worked for the State Road. And Lawrence got a job on the State Road during the summertime."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being like in college, you see, he would get a job during the summertime. And that's how I think they found out, you know. And I practiced with them, and we sang for like 3.5 years. And, I mean, these guys were so good, they could go. But I knew, 1962, mm-hmm. they graduated college. and I'm graduating out of here, you see, mm-hmm. because I knew that they were not going to go on the road. I didn't even think they would play a lot more. So that's when I was reading about Billy Ward, and I sent a picture and a tape, and that's how I got out of.
And the Fabians, were they Morgantown High guys?
Morgantown High
so
guys.
Were they white guys?
All white guys. Uh-huh. All white guys. And in collegians, all white guys. Uh-huh. As a matter of fact, when I tell people sometimes, like 80% or even more, that all the music I've done, and that's including churches and all, I'm about the only one of my persuasion. When I go around here to sing at all the different places I go, mostly country places anyway, you know, mm-hmm. but I'm the only one of my persuasion. Mm-hmm. When I go to churches, I'm usually the only one of my persuasion in most cases. Uh-huh. You know, well, Sister Sarah's in a group with us, they're saying, right. yeah. but most of the places I would go, like when in Farmington, I did a show up there Sunday evening, you know, I did my whole CD and up at Mr. Fluharty's church, and mm-hmm. every once in a while he'll have his daughter call and say, "When Al come up and want him to sing an hour," you know. And so I sing all my songs, you know. And but yeah, both was all white bands, and see, you know, and with the Fabians, see, there's a lot of. We all traveled in the same car. It never was like two cars. Just mm-hmm. when we had a trailer in the back, all the equipment in, we traveled. And all the places we went, everything was segregated in those days. Right. And these guys would be more concerned, like, about the girls, like this, you know. And Al is thinking, you know, am I going to be able to eat, you know, right. wherever we stopped right. and that kind of thing. But, see, they don't know that. There's stories I could tell, you know, these guys would never have a thought that what's on Al's mind, you know. But, you see, the whole kind of thing was, you know, inside that club, see, there's nobody like Al. Now, Al was it in the club. Even when I go to clubs up in here, no matter where, they got the country bands, and so they're always playing when I get there. And sometimes I feel a little bit kind of, because they have the house band.
Right.
But I've been going to those places for 25 years, so they all know my songs. And, you know, when I get to the place in there, you know, somebody else say, "Al, man, you got to get in there, man. You gotta liven it up," you know. They're ready to dance. They want to dance now, you know. And I used to go to this place down in Grafton, and the place would be jam-packed, you know, and the band's up there playing, and somebody's is singing. And I used to try to kind of slide in there the easiest way I can. But as soon as they would see, you know, I mean, they all start clapping, you know, and the band's already playing up there, you know. And it make me feel like so, but, you know, it's like, you know, it's like the blessing that you have and the blessing that you give. Because, see, people, you know, they recognize what you do and how well you do it. So, and that's what it's been like the whole time that I've sang somewhere. And in those bar mitzvahs and weddings, I had a rendition of Hawana Gila. I could hit that one note up there. And I got a picture over there. I still can do it, yeah. Well, when we did Met Theater, now this is like, you know, I was in my 60th year. This is 2 years ago, and these guys in the band, we do, I don't know if you ever heard my CD, you know, but it's on there, Georgia. We do, and that was the last song we did at the theater. And everybody was surprised, even the band. "Man, how can I hit that note, man?" You know, "Oh, yeah, I hit that note. But Hawana Gila, there's a picture that over there. Eve took pictures of all that too. Mm-hmm. Now, Hawana Gila, they dance. They dance and dance and dance. And when it comes down to like the last part of it, you know, it's just, the band is just still playing a little bit. But when I get to that Hawana Gila note, you know, I'm going, Udra Kim, Vanessa May. And I hit that high note, and people, they're touching each other, you know, watch, you know. Because even like the cantor and the rabbi, see, they wait till the third set, you know, before they go. And but everybody would wait to hear that. I could do Hawana Gila and just go home, you know.
Yeah, right.
You know, they could hire me for just for that.
Had you been to synagogues before?
But you did mostly regular songs and just a few Jewish songs that you do.
Uh-huh.
But I just perfected that. It's same as with Georgie, you know, you just, you know, you put a note in there, you know, and at the theater, Everybody was like, you know, wow, man. Man, that guy, man, that was gold as that guy is. He can still hit them notes, you know. But that's the blessing also, you know, because, you know, the Met Theater guys, see, they know. They fix that mic, even put my name on the mic, that I'm going to be using for that evening. And, like, when I go to these places to play, you know, almost all, you know, like I say, they're all country places, but the country band, they know all my old-time rock and roll songs. Mm-hmm. But I had a guy up at the Blackshaw area, and I told you, I'm the only one of my persuasion in those places, and you have about maybe six or eight people, like open mic. They'll come up and do a song. Uh-huh. And then the last one that sang, you know, then I'm coming on to sing an hour, and the mic is fine. Well, as soon as I get ready to sing, I mean, here's this guy. You would think he was on a racetrack. He was running around, and he got about halfway around there. I said, "Don't you touch that mic." And he stopped, you know, like he couldn't even believe what he was hearing, you know. He just kind of froze there. He froze for a minute, you know. And I think about the folks that went home, and I said, "Did you hear what he told that guy?" You see, if somebody in D.C. knew me, especially more music-wise, you know, and they say, "Hey, you know Al Anderson, don't touch that mic." You see, because, you know, the only way you can, and I told him at the theater, I said, "Now, there's three things about being able to keep your voice, you know, before I sang Georgia, I think." So the first thing is a friend of mine, we worked in a shoe store together named Chili Rayford, and he said, "Al, don't take those drinks. Because every 45 minutes on the break, and I work the clubs every night, don't take those drinks." So, I didn't take those drinks. And I never smoked cigarettes. And and the other thing is the microphone. See, I never played an instrument. I never wrote a song. Only thing I knew, me and that microphone, see, we are one. Mm-hmm. Me and that microphone, see. When that microphone is right, we're good. Everything's good. But leave it alone. Once it gets, you get people, and especially in the churches, and like, you know, we were talking about how we raise all that money for those kids in Uganda. You probably heard some about it, you know, and sometime you get these, I don't know what they think they're doing, you know. You get these so-called mechanics, you know, they want to be turning up and down to turn. No, you're not going to do that. And at a church, see, I haven't been kind of that, you know. Now, the other night up there, the microphone was perfect. See, didn't have to worry about nothing perky, but it's just me. But sometimes when whole group sings, you know, you have a little bit of a, and in some churches, they think that you don't hardly turn it up at all, you know. And so I want the microphone right. So I haven't been like as boisterous as I would be ordinarily. And, you know, but I'm not going to let that go on too much, you know. Even at the church, I'll let you know in the beginning. Look, man, you know, when I tell you the microphone's good, leave it alone. Go sit down. You know, you don't have to touch it anymore. Because right. They think when you get a little higher, they'll turn it down. No, you ruin, and a lot of kids that be singing in choirs and things like that, see, you ruin their voice if you keep messing with that mic. The microphone speaks for itself. You don't need you to speak for it, mm-hmm. You know. So that's the one thing. That's the third thing is the microphone has to be right. Uh-huh. And you couldn't sing because one time I got hoarse. Now, if I'm singing, like in a bar mitzvah for 4 hours, if I get hoarse in, you know, say in about 2 hours into it, then what are you going to do? Right. You ain't got no other singers, you know. So, no, the microphone has to be right, and I make sure of that. And if I have to chew you out, that's what I'm going to do, you know. And I don't care where I'm at, you know. I'm going to let you know because people want to hear you, and they ain't got no business messing with the microphone. So that was a thing that I had to deal with, you know.
Can I ask you about your family, your parents?
My dad was like 55 when I was born. And And we had a mom also, and we, she was, I was about 10 years old when she died up on the hill. And then my dad, my mom, my natural mom, she, my dad and her was, you know, I was born through that. That's why my dad was like 55 when I was born. Uh-huh. And my brother, he's a year and 11 months older than me. And in those days, you know, young women, you know, that, but actually it was even before my mom actually had died. So pretty much my dad and my brother and myself, my mom as a young woman, probably in maybe 20 years old by that time, she went to Dayton, Ohio, and then she lived there for all the rest of her life. But she would come and see, you know, me and my brother, and we would like go to Pittsburgh or somewhere, we'd go someplace, you know, we would have a whole kind of weekend together, you know, and then she would go back to to Dayton, Ohio. But it was a lot of things like that, you know, in those days where, you know, a younger woman, you know, that, but my dad took like real good care, you know, of us, you know, mm-hmm. we were really blessed to have a dad that, you know, he wouldn't have many of the families, you know, their dad drank real bad or, you know, that kind of thing. And but my dad wouldn't like that. He stayed up on that hill and he wouldn't, he wasn't someone that came out and, so we were blessed that way. Mm-hmm. And then myself, I have 7 youngsters, 5 from here, the lady I was married to here, mm-hmm. and then a young lady in D.C. that we had a daughter, mm-hmm. but then I was leaving D.C. going back to California, but I didn't know that the daughter was going to be born. So when I got to California, I kind of found that out. And then when I left D.C. to come here, to come back to D.C., a lady friend I was with, you know, matter of fact, she was about eight months pregnant when I came back from there. Mm-hmm. And I stayed with the one where the young lady from D.C. for a long time, and, you know, but the daughter in California I never stayed with, but they got in touch with me about, she was like, I guess, around 37 by that time, around there, and someone, when the sister called, and she was questioning me about, you know, if I was at a certain place at a certain time. I asked, mm-hmm. was that Deborah, you know? She said, no, you know, because I knew what she was questioning me, you know? Yeah. But, and then we never met yet, you know? But she was so excited, and her husband, because they had a couple of kids also, I had a big water in my bedroom back then. All my documents and things. This knucklehead that lived upstairs, he went and took all the tar all off the. You could see outside it, but he didn't put no cover over anything, you know. So here that morning, I mean, it's rain. It's like it was a rainfall in there, and I was some and a big one of them big things came down on my bed. But that, you know, just a big piece, it would have killed me. Wow. You know, hit right on the bed, and I lost a lot of my document things, you know. And so me and that daughter, we and they were so excited, you know, mm-hmm. about getting in touch with me. And and I would think, you know, through all the programs that I do, you know, through Facebook and all, you know, I would, you know, I'd be back in touch with them.
Right.
But and all the other ones now, mostly all my kids are in Atlanta.
Okay.
And so I do see them from time to time, but I don't see them enough. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to go there. I had those coons in my house, and I couldn't go the time that I was supposed to go. And but I need to go. Mm-hmm. And because my oldest son, he's 61. He just turned May the 31st. And they have three birthdays in March, and I miss one's on the 6th, one's on the 12th, and 30, you know, and then my oldest daughter, she's, well, May 18th is my second son, and May and July the 24th is my oldest daughter. So we keep in touch, you know, but we don't see each other very much, but, you know, we keep in touch, like, you know, all the time. So, and I told them when I have because a lot of folks around here don't know Al has any family or anything like that, you know. And when I do my big performance, I'm going to have all of my kids, I'm going to have all of them in that place,
cool,
in different places. Uh-huh. And I'm going to have all of them stand up, you know. That's another thing. No, I think the one granddaughter this year, the oldest son, he has the youngest girl, about 13 years old. Now, my second son, all his kids are in their 30s. And my daughter, she, oldest daughter, all her kids are in their sort of 30s, 20s and 30s. And my youngest daughter, she has a son that's here. And he's in his 30s also. And but no, two things they don't do too much is the music part and the shoe part. Uh-huh. As I said, if anything happens to me, my kids will come here to get me. Yeah. But they won't look in here, uh-huh, and they won't look in over there.
Yeah.
Because they'll have no thought. They don't want nothing that Dad has. Right. You know,
right.
just come and get Dad. Mm-hmm. And that's the crux of it. You know.
Where was your dad from?
He originally was like in the North Carolina area. And I think he came at about 14 years old, you know. See, many of those men back in those days, you had to leave those towns in a hurry for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can be, and a lot of times there's a lot of people, you didn't take no mess, you know. And when things may have got up on you where you're leaving town tonight, you know, waiting until in the morning. And I think that's how his, you know, situation was. Uh-huh. And I think he came here and he went in the Pennsylvania area first, because that's when he married who it was my mom. Mm-hmm. And then brought it here to work, you know, because everything was coal. You know, you work in a coal mine, you know, somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where he came from. And other family. That there was my mom's family in Pittsburgh that we used to go there all the time, but you used to lose all your, after so long. Mm-hmm. you don't even know where that family's at anymore, you know. So you used to go to visit. Mm-hmm. But not very lot, you know, around here, not whole lot of family at all, but not much family.
What was it like growing up here in Osage?
Well, it was probably the best growing up, because when you talk about people, you know, that you don't even realize, you know, when they talk with Eleanor Roosevelt, you know, that came here, and nobody probably thought they was as poor as it was portrayed to be until she was here to find out we not only were poor, we were like dirt poor, you know. But you know, everybody had a little bit, you know. You had enough money to raise your family, you know. And if everyone killed a hog up on that hill, people would share, you know, share meat and share homes. And you know it was like, you know, we just, nobody any more than each other. So all those nationalities got together. And I was thinking the other day, you know, about how, you know, a family down there, the Saturday family, they would have, like, whatever their nationality was, they would have, like, their big, you know, they didn't invite, like, you know, like people from around, you know, they invited all of their folks, you know, that may live in other places around, you know, but, oh, they'd be dancing and things, and they'd have all their different, they'd have their different, you know, situations with people. Yeah, she'd just be here for a minute.